listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send us a text at 2057, email inbox at realitycheck.radio. Email us, inbox at realitycheck.radio. Ooh, tongue-tied. Oh, we're very blessed to have Mary Byrne from Fluoride Free New Zealand. They have a goal of just eliminating adding of fluoride to water in New Zealand. Very admirable. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, good morning, Rodney. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a total pleasure. It's a total pleasure. Tell me, what got you into this, just not being opposed to it, but getting really active?
Well, it was just a couple of months before they wanted to fluoridate the suburb I was living in, which was Petone in the Hutt Valley. I had found out about fluoridation. So prior to that, I was, like most New Zealanders, thought that it was an essential nutrient, that most of the Western world did it, that it was good for the teeth, help poor children, and they wouldn't do it if there was any doubts about.
Oh, you sound like me. But I was like,
I think that's what we all got taught. That's what we all thought that.
Isn't it crazy? And if you said to me, where did you learn that? I'd say, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, same. I wonder if we learned it at school. Yeah. But I feel like I always knew that or something. But then a couple of months prior to that, and then I was living in Petone, which was not fluoridated. So I had grown up in a fluoridated area. And then about 16, I moved to Petone. Anyway, I happened to read this book called Your Health at Risk by Toni Jeffries, who's a New Zealand author, and she had all these chapters on all different things, and there was one on fluoridation, and I was shocked because I thought, wow, there's all these doctors and scientists that are opposed to fluoridation, and they're saying really, you know, serious things about it. And so that shocked me because I had thought they wouldn't do it if there was doubts about safety. Because it's not something you have to do, you know, so it's not like the chlorine. Well, that's debatable, but, you know, they're not putting it in there to clean the drinking water. They're just putting it in there to medicate us. So I wouldn't think you would do that unless you were absolutely sure you weren't going to harm anybody.
Total. Because you've got to say, what's the risk of not doing it versus what's the risk of doing it?
You know, and I thought, what say you get 50 years down the track and you realise that you caused everyone to have cancer or something like that? I mean, we've got, you know, 60 years, 70 years down the track, and we're realising that we've probably lowered the IQ of everybody that grew up with fluoridated water to some extent.
You know? So you started looking into it, decided it wasn't a good idea, but then you took the next step of getting active.
Yeah, well, then what happened, about 2 months later, the Hutt City Council wanted to close down our pumping station and hook us up with Lower Hutt pumping station, which was a sensible financial move. It was actually the same water supply, but they added fluoride. So I went to my friend's place and said to her, we should do something about this because we don't want fluoride in our water. And so we got active then, and we did a big petition and flyers and got people at the community board meeting and then at the council, you know, all of that normal active stuff, right? And so because there was so much pushback from Petone, where we had been really proud of our clean drinking water, because you might remember Petone used to be a poor area, right?
Yes.
And So that was something that we were proud of, because we said we had the best drinking water in the country. Whether we did or not, I don't know, but that's what we said. Anyway, so that we still had more democracy back then than we do today. And the Hutt City Council ended up, they did a big survey of Petone, and Petone people didn't want fluoridation. So they spent $450,000 back in 1999, 2000, shifting fluoride injectors around so that Korokoro Petone still does not have fluoridated water. And also as part of the bargain, the Petone Community Board got argued for a fountain opposite where the old pumping station was. And so now hundreds of people go there every week getting their water.
Wow.
Hundreds of people. And that's actually how I have come across people that have got well from drinking that Petone water, getting off the tap water. So, and that just sort of came up because Sean Plunkett was just asking me if I know anybody that has been affected by fluoride, you know, and so I have met people that have had chronic fatigue and everything, you know.
Well, we just had on Tuesday, Palin Huntress ring in, very articulate, and it was shocking to me because he got overdosed with fluoride when he was a kid, his mum and dad doing what they thought was right, giving him tablets, and they fluoridated the water where he lived in Oamaru, Waitaki water supply, and he did everything he could not to drink the water, but still he had an epileptic seizure when he hadn't had one for years. And he says, because it's impossible to avoid. So that food, coffee, it's tough, right? It's a shocking thing. You think the Director General of Health is destroying my health.
Yeah.
He's a case.
Yeah, that's right. So after we stopped it in Petone, that, you know, you're asking sort of why did I continue to be active? So my number one reason was I found out that some people are hypersensitive to fluoride. So it's not actually allergy, it's hypersensitivity, because what we're talking about is a poison, just like lead.
Yes.
So we really got to think about fluoride as being the new lead. And when we think of fluoride, just think of lead and then think about how that makes you feel. So I found out that around about 1% of the population are hypersensitive and spend their lives being sick because most people don't find out it's the water. So that really got to me because I thought, that's just so wrong. That's so wrong we would be making 1% of the people sick, you know, and just on that, their lives are miserable. And then the second part that really pushed me along too was I realised that the Ministry of Health were not telling us the truth and the media were not providing a proper balance of evidence even then, but it was way better then than what it is today. Luckily, we have some other sources now like RCR, but mainstream media, you know, don't even report on anything anymore. But so the other part was thinking that if we've got the Ministry of Health not telling us the truth about something this serious, then as a country, we're in a serious situation because, you know, they're putting a poison in the drinking water and telling us it's good for teeth when it's not actually good for teeth. And they're pretending that it's not hurting people when it is hurting people. So when you're poisoning the well, I mean, how much bigger does it get? And so
it doesn't get bigger.
So then as you can see, and also, you know, it sort of really got to me that we were being way too apathetic and gullible for one thing, and then apathetic of not saying, hey, no way, you're not allowed to spike my drink.
Well, I plead guilty to being, what were the words? Apathetic and gullible. If you had spoken to me 5 years ago, I wouldn't have done a Plunkett on you because I'd be polite and I'd listen. But I'd think to myself in the back of my head, pooky, right? If I met myself, if my old self met me, I'd think I'm kooky, right? Because I hadn't, what's the word? I hadn't slipped off the narrative, you know? It was COVID. Because once you realize they were lying through their teeth about COVID, you think, wow, my experience of liars is they don't just do it once. Too easy for them. And so now I look at fluoride afresh, and it's terrible.
It is terrible.
Do you understand their motivation? Or is it a dark thing?
Well, I mean, I can only guess, right?
Yeah.
I can only guess that it's for a lot of them, it's too hard to admit they're wrong. You know how I was saying, like, just imagine, you know, why I would never have wanted to put something in a water supply was because in case you're wrong and you find out 50 years later you've given everyone cancer or in this case, lowered IQ, would you, how hard it would be to admit.
You could never admit it. You could never admit it to yourself.
There you go. So that's most probably the motivation. And I think that we can see that they don't really believe in what they're saying because they won't come out into the public.
No.
So the Western Bay of Plenty Council invited the Ministry of Health to come and talk. You know, if you're going to give a directive, this order, you must add these chemicals into your drinking water or else. Surely they can come and explain, but no, they won't. They won't even come out and explain.
Amazing. To a council.
Yeah, to a council, I know. That's what shocked me as well.
I mean, it's not like Joe Public. Oh, my goodness. I mean, if you were confident in your decision, you would front everywhere at every opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I mean, the reason actually that it's gone to the Director General of Health is because we were winning the argument. Because what was happening was we were going to councils and we were explaining the situation. And yes, a lot of them thought we were nutty, particularly at first. Like I can remember this councillor up in Kapiti Coast, and he said the first time he saw myself and my friend, you know, go and talk, he was thinking to himself, oh, these women are nutcases, you know.
Yeah.
And then we spoke again at the community board that he was at. And then he thought, oh, maybe they've got something. So he went and did the research, and then he became a really strong advocate for us, and we nearly got adopted at Kapiti Coast. But what was happening is we were getting it stopped in some places, and we got it stopped in New Plymouth, we got it stopped in Hamilton for a while until they had the referendum. And then we were putting a lot of pressure on Wellington and Auckland. And that is what... and Kapiti Coast, and that's what pushed it up to the Director General of Health, because they wanted to take it away from the local councils because the councils were going to fall. You know, I think we would have got the councils over. So
that deluded fool, Ashley Bloomfield, I think calling him a deluded fool was giving him the benefit of the doubt. He did this on his way out the door.
Yeah, I know.
It was like a kick in the guts after he'd smacked you in the head for 4 or 3 years.
Yeah, I know. It's awful. It's really awful what that one's done.
Now, the reason for chatting is to have it explained to us. By the way, listeners, I'm talking to Mary Byrne from Fluoride Free New Zealand. Got a great web page full of plenty of resources about fluoride in the water. And you're here to talk about... I've got it up, 80 pages odd. The United States District Court, Northern District of California, findings of fact and conclusions of law, and it's Food and Water Watch Incorporated are the plaintiffs and others versus the United States Environmental Protection Agency, who were the defendants. It's a big deal. Now, we should be excited by this if you're not keen on fluoride. And if you are keen on fluoride, you should think, oh, I better sort of check my assumptions here. Tell us about this court case and what it means.
Okay, well, the court case started because they've got a law over there called Toxic Substances Control Act, and it allows for... citizens to petition the Environmental Protection Agency when they think that a chemical poses an unreasonable risk. So they can go to the EPA and say, can you please, you know, look at this, do a risk assessment on it. But so Fluoride Action Network in the US went there and the EPA said no. So the law then allows them to take that to court. Mm-hmm. So they took them to the court, and it's been running over 7 years, this court case.
No.
Yes. It was lodged in 2017. So the petition was lodged in 2016 with EPA, and then the court case in 2017. So it took a few years to get actually to the court in 2020. And then we had a big break because they were waiting for the results of the National Toxicology Program Review, okay, which has been the major review. So that gave a pause. And then they had the trial again in February this year. And we've finally now had the result from that, the ruling. And the conclusion that the federal court judge said was, plaintiffs have proven by a preponderance of the evidence that water fluoridation at the level of 0.7 milligrams per litre presents an unreasonable risk of injury to health or the environment. So 0.7 is what the US and Canada fluoridate at. We fluoridate at a target of 0.85. So yes, we fluoridate at a higher level. And what the... So they looked at the evidence from both sides. It was, you know, really robust, and they relied a lot on the National Toxicology Program systematic review, because that was a 7-8 year review, and that looked at, you know, all of the studies on fluoride IQ that have been coming out. And what that review found was that fluoride is a neurotoxin. So nobody's arguing that it's not a neurotoxin. So the EPA agree it's a neurotoxin. The EPA already agree that at 4 parts per million, it's a neurotoxin. Then the National Toxicology Program said at 1.5 part per million, or if you have total exposure, that is similar to 1.5 part per million. Because the whole thing about the level in the water is ridiculous anyway, because we all drink different amounts.
That's
we all
right.
weigh different. You know, this is a medicine that they're just willy-nilly putting in the drinking water. Fetuses are small, but they've got getting a lot of water. A bottle-fed baby, small, getting, you know, a whole lot of water. So it's a whole thing's a ridiculous concept. But anyway, the National Toxicology Program, you know, at least they're definitely saying 1.5 part per million neurotoxic. So what the judge is saying is that, and the NTP said, the highest quality studies, some of the highest quality studies, were at 0.7 part per million. So that's the Green study from Canada and a few others. So the Green study was in published in JAMA Pediatrics because it was such a good study, and that looked at the fluoride urine levels of the mothers while they were pregnant, and then compared it to the IQ of the children. So then you have a 1-to-1. So you're not.
Wow.
It's really definite, and that's showing that a 1 milligram increase in fluoride urine reduces IQ by about 5 IQ points. So that's about what we are doing in New Zealand. So we're looking at probably an average of 4 to 5 IQ point drop. So the NTP, you know, recognise that these really good studies are at fluoridated water, and the judge acknowledged that. But he said, but even if we go to 1.5, or even if we were to go to 4 part per million that the EPA don't even argue with, you have to have a margin of safety.
Of course.
And, you know, a risk analysis would have a margin of safety. It should really be 100, considering how many people are involved and, you know, how important it is. But even if you had 10, you're down to 0.4 part per million. So that's half of what we have. So it's definitely, you know, we are definitely over. There's no margin of safety at all.
And so really, to recap, if I got this right, correct me if I've got it wrong, because I'm a layman looking at this and I haven't read the judgment. It's 80 pages and it's got numbers and graphs and stuff. It's accepted that fluoride is a neurotoxin. All sides accept that. The question then is, well, what happens if we put a little bit in? Maybe it's not a neurotoxin at a little bit, and it'll be good for teeth. Well, they've done, to quote the experts back at them, they love peer-reviewed science, which is your mates agreeing with you. But the peer-reviewed science is in multiple studies, a huge toxicology study done, all put before the judge, with the biggest environmental agency in the world the EPA arguing against these studies.
Yeah.
So put before a judge in a federal court was the case. Now, the judge, rightly, in terms of the law, had to just do the balance of probabilities. It didn't have to be proved. It was just a risk assessment. He said, you can't be putting this in the water, given these studies, right? Here we are in New Zealand, and our Director General of Health is ordering councils to put it in the water. Like these studies don't exist or don't apply in New Zealand. When these councils in New Zealand say, hang on, we've got people kicking up, can you come and explain this to us? They say no. It's gets you angry. It's hard to know what to say, isn't it?
No, it's shocking.
So, it's shocking. I mean, I just think one of these studies would cause New Zealand just to stop everything.
Yeah, it should. It should have. It should have. We should have erred on the side of caution a long, long, long time ago.
At least the tobacco companies had an excuse that they were making money. Right? They didn't say we're the health department. They were private companies making money, and they'd argue uphill and down dale for a long time that, you know, smoking tobacco wasn't bad for you. The Ministry of Health has no excuse.
No, apart from, you know, protecting their reputation, I suppose. I suppose that's what it is. So what the judge ruled too was that he ruled that this is what he's able to do under this act, was he ruled that, you know, it is an unreasonable risk, so therefore that the Environmental Protection Agency has to take steps to reverse or remove that risk. That's what they have to do. So that leaves us in a position that we're waiting for the EPA. Or, you know, the law over there is waiting for the EPA. But he says they have to take action. They can't not take action. And so to, reduce or remove that risk, I don't see how you can reduce it, really. I mean, you could reduce the level in the water, but what level would you come to? And then why would fluoridation, what would be the point of it, you know? So really, they need to remove it. So in the meantime, though, what we are hoping, and we've just started to see, is some of the cities and towns in the USA stopping fluoridation of their own volition, having a bit of common sense. And over in the USA, apart from three states, I think it is, their municipalities can make the decision like we used to be able to in New Zealand.
Yes.
So the trouble for us, you know, is because it's with the Director General of Health, and our councils do not seem to have the backbone to stand up. I feel that what's happened is that even though we're getting more people to understand fluoridation is an issue and they're open-minded, I don't think many people yet have really grasped how bad it is, because if we start thinking about if the average loss of IQ is 4 to 5 IQ points.
That's a lot.
And that's the average, right? So some people won't have lost any and some people will have lost more.
I've wondered where mine went.
You're saying, I know I could do with a few more IQ points, yeah. That's for sure. So if a population loses 5 IQ points, because this is what was happening with lead, so it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same effect, I think, probably pretty much on our whole bodily system as lead as well, because it affects the thyroid, you know, your immune system, accumulates in your bones, all of those sort of things. But if you shift the whole population down by 5 IQ points, what you do is half the number of geniuses and increase by 50% the number of children that are mentally impaired. So that's a whole lot of children, a whole lot of people that could have functioned in society, that could have lived on their own and could have gone, had a job. But we've pushed them over so that they need care. And, of course, we're just reducing the whole asset of intelligence in New Zealand by reducing, you know, the geniuses and all of us not being as smart as what we could have been. Now, one of the good studies that, well, very interesting ones that has come out of Canada that was funded by the National Institutes of Health. So National Institutes of Health is, you know, US Public Health Service, and they've funded 10 studies now, finally, since 2017 on fluoride and IQ. So these are consecutive studies of all showing that fluoride lowers IQ, and mostly they've been done in Canada. And this one from Canada, the TIL study 2020, it looked at bottle feeding, and it found that children bottle-fed fluoridated water lose an average of 9 IQ points.
Jeepers.
I know. It's awful to think about it, really. So if we
carry on.
Oh, I just think if we've taken that, like, that big picture of what it's been doing to us for the last 70 years, or 60 years for most places that have been fluoridated, we've had a huge impact on this country. And so there's, you know, the mental side, the neurotoxic side. So the IQ is something that's been studied, but, you know, there's the ADHD that's being studied as well. So there's studies coming out all about that. And we know there's more ADHD and everything than there ever used to be. Mm. Then there's dementia. So that hasn't really been studied yet, but it makes sense that if something's affecting the brain, that it's probably going to, you know, that needs to be looked at, doesn't it? Dementia and Alzheimer's.
Of course.
So,
then if you don't look, you don't see.
Exactly. And we don't do the research here in New Zealand.
No.
So we look at teeth, you know, that's what we do that. And we've had the one Broadbent study from Dunedin in 2014. And he's a dental researcher, and he did a study comparing Mosgiel to Dunedin, looking at their IQ. But the National Toxicology Program considered it to be low quality, and it was obviously low quality, because what he did was he had 99 children in the non-fluoridated, and then something like 891, I think, in the fluoridated. But so that's, you know, not balanced to start with. But then worse, he had 139 children that had they took fluoride tablets at some stage, but he never corresponded them to were they the fluoridated or the non-fluoridated children. Because if the 99 children were all taking fluoride tablets, then you've got the same exposure anyway. So it's a really obvious flaw. But, you know, apart from the neurotoxicity, 50% of all of what we consume is stored in our bones and soft tissue. Now, the first stage of skeletal fluorosis is a known disease from too much fluoride. And the first stage of skeletal fluorosis is identical to osteoarthritis, which is bone and joint pain. So we have, you know, the lower chronic exposure over those years. Now, how many people who are 60 or more or older do not have any bone or joint pain that have lived their lives in a fluoridated area? I doubt there would be many. I doubt it. Because the way fluoride builds up in your bones, it would make sense that people would be starting to have skeletal fluorosis. So that's another aspect. Then there's the aspect that it affects the thyroid. So a really good study from the UK in 2015 looked at all the health practices, and it found that, you know, where there was more fluoride, there was a higher prescribing of thyroid medication. So when they compared non-fluoridated Manchester to fluoridated Birmingham, Birmingham had 60% more hypothyroidism for women than Manchester did. So then you think, you've got all these people with a lower thyroid, they can't lose weight, they don't know why, but it's actually because their thyroid's not working. But that's a hard one for doctors to detect. So there's that sub-hypothyroidism that lots of people have. They're tired, then the depression, anxiety. I mean, these are the big things that are going on in New Zealand. They're not rare.
And it could be fluoride. Now,
I would say that fluoride is definitely implicated.
Mm. So in the United States, at least, there's only, I notice now, a few countries fluoridating. I've got Australia, the States, New Zealand, Singapore, Malaysia, and Ireland. Yeah. And it came out of the WHO, and there used to be 30 states, and now we're down to this remaining 8 countries. Now, I would imagine the United States, you'd be very worried about getting sued. I suppose the direct causal link, it's sort of statistical, but you'd have to be worried about, after this case has come out, if you're a municipality putting fluoride in water and you're still doing it.
Yeah.
Over there, it's very litigious, isn't it?
Yeah, I think where people maybe will end up suing is people who have dental fluorosis. Because if you have dental fluorosis, which is it can start off as little white spots on the teeth, as people get older, it actually gets discolored. But anyway, if you've got some form of dental fluorosis, which you only get that from having too much fluoride as your teeth were growing, then you have the outward sign of being poisoned by fluoride. So those people should be able to sue, I would think, in the future. I mean, that they've got the physical proof. Wow. What they wouldn't have, though, is then they'd say, did you use a fluoride toothpaste? And most people use a fluoride toothpaste. Wow. So then how do you know which one caused it, you know?
Yeah, but putting it in the water didn't help. Tell me, what are the legal implications of this in New Zealand? For example, is it possible for a citizen to bring an action like was brought in the States under New Zealand law?
Not that I know of like that, but we do have the New Health New Zealand case against the Director General of Health, and that's questioning or challenging the directives that have gone to those 14 councils. So they had a point of, I'm not sure what they call it, point of order, but it's not that. It was something they took aside to look at, did it affect the Bill of Rights? Was that impacted? And so that happened in November last year, and the Judge Radich said, you know, these directives were unlawful because the Bloomfield didn't consider the Bill of Rights.
That's right.
And we know that fluoridation engages Section 11 of the Bill of Rights because the 2018 Supreme Court had already ruled that, right? That fluoridation is compulsory medical treatment, because once it's in the water, it is really difficult to avoid. Yeah. That's what they were saying. That's what's happened to Caitlin. You can't really avoid it once it's in the water. And they said, and that engages Section 11 of our Bill of Rights, which is our right to refuse to undergo medical treatment. But what was left not decided was whether it was justifiable under Section 5, which is the which gives them a right to overrule our fundamental rights if they think it's a justified limitation.
Yeah.
So that part.
They can always override it if they do the paperwork.
Yeah. So they hadn't done the paperwork. So the judge said it's unlawful. And so we thought that should mean that the directives wouldn't be able to go ahead. But then in November, when they came back to do remedy, he said that the directives were still valid. And so we don't even know what that legal term is, valid. And so we have a situation where these directives are unlawful, but they're valid. So that doesn't make any sense. But anyway, that's what's happened. So we, you know, us Fluoride Free New Zealand and New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science, we took the Hastings District Council to court saying that no one had done the Bill of Rights assessment. And the judge had ruled in November that somebody has to do a Bill of Rights assessment. Mm-hmm. And nobody's done it. But anyway, the judge that we had, he said, oh, no, Judge Radich has already said that they're valid, so they're valid. That's it. So we really are kind of hamstrung in that way. The New Health New Zealand case goes ahead next year, so we'll see what happens, because there'll be a lot more that they'll be talking about in that case other than just the Bill of Rights. So the Director General of Health at the moment is doing a Bill of Rights analysis. we have no faith that she would do.
No, of course
not. Do a proper one. But so what we really need in New Zealand is people. We need people getting active because I don't think, you know, we're not going to stop this unless people get active, no. Especially because we don't have a mainstream media that reports on things.
Are there any opposition MPs sympathetic who would ask questions of the Minister of Health? None.
No, haven't found anybody.
Isn't it gobsmacking?
Yeah, the Greens support fluoridation, even though fluoridation is corruption. Yeah. And I mean, you would think that they wouldn't, you know, support it.
Of course.
Fluoridation is pollution. You know, it's a cool job about the pollution because they're not allowed to let the fluoride out into the air.
The Greens support fluoridation. Oh, my goodness me. I thought they'd be useful for one thing.
Put it in tankers and send it to the councils, and then it goes into the environment. So it's just a big con job, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, how infuriating. And the major newspapers and TV networks and radio networks outside of RCR, crickets, just nothing.
No.
And the Director General of Health knows that she will never be held to account because all the MPs are in on it, all the media are in on it, and they've just got to keep us fringe people to the margins.
Yeah, but, you know, we're not actually the fringe people. You know, when they do referendum in non-fluoridated places, we normally win.
Because it's interesting, isn't it? Because you think, no, don't put it in the water. You know, because you just feel it's wrong. Like, you can understand if there's bacteria, you got to put a bit of chlorine in and clean it up a bit because there's been bacteria. But even that troubles you. But fluoride, if I was asked, actually, to be fair, even if I was asked 5 years ago, I'd say no, even though I knew nothing about it and I thought everyone was cookers that were complaining about it, just because it seems wrong. Just on the face of it, it seems wrong. Water's water. You don't need to add stuff to it if it's clean enough to drink.
Well, it's about having respect for other people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't force someone else to take a medical treatment. If you have respect for that person, regardless of whether they're poor or wealthy or what race they are, if you have respect for them, you do not force them to take a medical treatment. And that is what it is. And the whole point of fluoridation is to force it onto people. Because if the point was to reduce dental decay, then what the government would introduce is the Scottish Child Smile Program. So in Scotland, the children had really bad tooth decay. So in 2000, they implemented a school toothbrushing scheme and like the nursery schools, you know, from about age three up. So I think age three to age seven, that kind of idea. And they first of all started it in the really poor areas and they did the school toothbrushing. And then what they found was dental decay rates went down a lot and they halved the number of general anaesthetics. And then because of that, they've rolled it out to the whole of Scotland because it's this hugely successful program. Now the Scottish kids have better teeth than the New Zealand kids when they didn't used to. So why is our government not doing that? Because that works. They know it works. And they know that everyone is happy with that. It allows informed consent. It doesn't, you know, put all these pollutants into the environment, et cetera. So the only reason to do fluoridation is, well, to force medically treat you or to get rid of the toxic waste or both. Maybe they like both of those aspects.
Well, the good news is we have a court case that we can quote and you can readily find it online. And if people want chapter and verse, it's there. We've got a great tagline, fluoride is the new lead. And we've got Fluoride Free New Zealand and Mary Byrne active, empowering us with information. Go to their site. Find out if your water is fluoridated and ask your council why. In light of this court case, are they fluoridating water? And we will keep hassling that Director General to see if we can get her or someone she delegates to front.
So, yeah, that would be great. So, Rodney, I'd also ask that everybody sign the petition if they haven't already.
Oh,
Probably
yes. Where do
probably
we find
listen
the
before.
petition?
It's on our website. It's the second
Okay.
slider at the moment. I'll put it back to being the first. So when you first come on it to it.
I will sign it directly.
Oh, cool. And if people want to download the paper version and actually go out in the street and collect signatures, that would also be awesome.
Right.
Plus, we would like people fronting up to the councils in every fluoridated area or every directed council. So probably best they get hold of us. And we can talk them through how to get it on the
Right.
agenda and all that sort of thing. Because we've really got to start thinking that this is like lead. And if
Yes.
they were putting lead in the drinking water, we would not be sitting around thinking, oh, well, it's only a little bit.
And it wasn't that long ago we didn't worry about lead.
Yeah, that's right. And now.
Well, bless you, Mary. Bless you for the work that you do, and God give you strength. Because we all need it to get through this, because it's like the complete failure of our institutions to care for us, to engage in rational debate, to discuss it, and to explain these decisions, to medicate the entire population, when a federal court judge in the US gets all the information presented to him on both sides and decides no.
That's all right.
Amazing. That was Mary Byrne from Fluoride Free New Zealand. Go to the webpage, check it out, sign the petition. You'll see my name on it. And you're on Rally Check Radio. Send us a text, 2057, email inbox at rallycheck.radio.
Okay, thanks, Rodney. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for listening.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.